I start, I'd just like to check with you that you can hear my voice without the microphone. And if you can't, you can get half the British Army down the row here. Do feel free to move your mats just further down to make it easier for you. And there's an empty mat here as well. Space here. In the Bible it says that Jesus spoke to 5,000, and I thought, without a microphone, who are you kidding? Well, the theme for the afternoon talk is perception, feelings, and liberation. In the exploration, that is here, there are many important elements and aspects to it, of course. And with this word perception there, in its use in this body of teaching, as mentioned to you a couple of days ago, that it's valuable to remember in mind that the way we are looking at something, that means the perception of, the recognition of, the naming of what it is, as an example, is the way one is looking at it now. This is the way of looking. And equally and importantly as well, in we hear from the other, whoever she or he is, and our ears are there and we listen, and whatever he or she says to us, as we listen, we perceive. And if there is some clarity in the being, the simple truth is recognized. This is what he or she is saying to me right now. And that recognition of that gives the potential and the possibility for some change. This is how it's being viewed now. This is how it is being stated in this particular time. In the relationship of perception to feeling, which is one of the most fundamental and important of the dynamics of relationship there, when in the circumstances there, in our meditations, as well as outside of them, events of life make an impression. When I open my eyes to you, and you to me in this situation, there is an impression. And with that impression, there may well be some kind of feeling. So there is a recognition of what is taking place. There is a feeling which goes with it, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And it's important as well to be able to recognize when that perception is made, when that feeling, if we can catch it, is recognized as well, what are the circumstances which happen afterwards? What goes with that perception and that feeling? The bare perception, that means, oh, this is the way I'm looking at myself. The bare feeling could be pleasant or unpleasant or in between. That easily happens for us. But it's the immediacy afterwards that is critical. And therefore, it is essentially what is being made of that which I perceive and feel, either towards myself, so to speak, or from the other self, so to speak. And when there is some clarity, this is what the thought is now, this is what the feeling is now, about an outer or an inner. When there is some clarity, if there is thought which comes from the clarity, the thought will state precisely and clearly what is happening. So that may be in our meditation. So we're engaged in meditation and we perceive the breath, we perceive the body, there are certain feelings or sensations which arise. The thought is accurate. It might say, oh, right now the body feels hot, it feels cool. There is some pain in this part of the body, whatever it might be. From that moment, how we perceive afterwards, you following me, afterwards is the critical. You can be the Buddha of the Buddhas of the Buddhas. There will still be these perceptions, there will still be these feelings, and the difference between the Buddhas and the ordinary mind is the ordinary mind makes too much of what it perceives and feels. It exaggerates it. And in the exaggeration, the perception and the feeling gets inflamed. We do it with ourselves, we do it with others, we do it with goods and items and people and situations and environments. And our mindfulness, which is such a precious human element, and our concentration, part of its function, is to be able to perceive, feel, if thought is necessary, a fairly accurate thought of what is perceived and feel there. And the mindfulness and the concentration has then the capacity as the basis to keep us steady. We will not so easily get in to either inflaming the situation through excitement and fantasy and ideas and hopes, which could easily crash. And we will not inflame the situation with agitation and self-blame and self-criticism. Perception, feeling, some degree of support of mindfulness and meditation. The wise use of thought to just describe clearly what the event or experience is, and being extremely mindful of, do we make more of it? And if we do, if that exaggeration begins to set in, you're all too human here, but remember, every exaggeration is the spark for suffering. Suffering cannot arise in the heart and mind and thought without an exaggeration of the situation. And if we can just have enough mindfulness just to catch there, we may still slip, as we easily do, into some reactivity, you know, building things up, putting things down, building ourselves up, putting ourselves down, building others up, putting them down. We may easily slip into that. The mindfulness is still important. It's still necessary for us to say, ah, the exaggerations are coming in. The inflammations are coming in. The karma is coming in. The history is coming in. The old ways are coming in. And we just need enough, just at least to try and catch that. Because if we don't, the belief system in the being will actually believe that the truth is in all the reactivity. The truth is in the building up. The truth is in the putting down. And only that can only be seen as the truth of the matter only through the identification with that process. Through the eye grasping on to that unnecessary extra there. The Buddha has lots of Pali words in the text, and one of them, Asafa, know well, it describes this process beautifully, and the word which is used is papancha. And that papancha meaning there's a simple perception, feeling, simple recognition, but after that can come this profusion, this production line of thought, reactions, building up and putting down, and we get lost in all of that there. Not only do we get lost in it, but it's incredibly tiring. Is it any wonder, you know, people are saying, gosh, I'm so tired, I'm exhausted, I'm worn out, I've got no energy or whatever. And it's not because of age, you know, people are getting older, and it's not because of so-called overwork or whatever. It's because of papancha. It's too much in this inner world. And we forget that too much thinking, every little thought that you and I have, when it's exaggerated, every thought is a little unit of energy. And too much units of energy, day in and day out, and our mind, through that perception, feeling, and too much thought, is it any wonder so many human beings, because of it being heated up inside, that come the end of the day, and one just wants to put the head down on the pillow and at least for 6 or 7 hours, absolutely forget this world. There is no greater interest late at night when we are really tired to see the end of this world. You know, we're saying to ourselves, give me a break. But we can't, because of all the stimulation from within, let alone from without, through this thought, feelings, and perceptions, all that conglomeration, all that there. We put our head down, and though we do not want to see anybody else, hear anybody else, smell anything, taste anything, touch anything, feel anything, have any thought, we don't want any of it, we just give me a break. And we can't find it. Put our head down, we can't sleep. And then we wake up in the morning and we feel tired. And then we struggle through the day, and then it goes over again. The conservation of the energy, and an important aspect of it, it's not the only one, obviously, as I said, is this departure from. The mindfulness practice. One of the Buddhist monks came up with a rather nice new word. He says there is mindfulness, but mindfulness, why can't we have kindfulness? Do you get the English? Kindfulness. To me, it's making a really important point here. What I mean by that, in our practice here, very easily we're endeavouring to be mindful. And we may be one of the staff working in the kitchen with the vegetables and the tea, or doing the office work, or meditating in the hall. And a little of the difficulty, and I think the vulnerability, is we can be so keen on mindfulness and concentration that in the keenness for that, we actually begin to forget the feeling life. It's not that we're suppressing it or denying it, but the feeling life can kind of get neglected. And that fusion, the bringing together, requires from us the recognition, where is the feeling when I'm meditating? What is the feeling when I'm being mindful, chopping the vegetables or whatever there? And to see, is the feeling being felt? You're doing walking meditation, and you're walking up and down, and there is one of the great songs of another decade, which actually played in the hall here, some of you will know, Where is the Love? It's a pretty profound question. So sometimes in the walking meditation, as an example, we can ask ourselves, where is the love? And if our mindfulness and concentration is kind of very strong, it could be that the feeling element is not harmonized with the mindfulness and the meditation. And another time, as I've noticed in some of our one-to-ones and groups as well, we quite naturally will start sometimes with, I'm feeling okay. The retreat and the days, I had an ups and downs, it was difficult, which is that dynamic of feelings and thoughts and perceptions, but now I really feel I'm settling in. I had a very sweet moment, or whatever it might be. So when the feeling mode is arising for us, you know, moments that we might speak it, we might say it for ourselves, do please listen to this feeling mode. Catch the feeling mode, it's a training here. So that when we say, oh, I really feel okay today, we might stop in terms of the method and technique. Really feeling okay in this situation, without going into a lot of thinking about, and just be quietly receptive, what is contributing in this moment to feeling good, as I say, to feeling okay, to feeling settled. Because every experience, as we keep saying, comes together because the conditions are there for it to come together. You may have come and you felt a bit sick. You may have come here and felt a bit tired. You may have come here and felt there was a lot going on in your mind, etc. The days are going by there, and one is having the sense, hopefully, of presence more. What's contributing to that? And the important thing, it's the important thing, to feel in the healthier moments of our being, to really feel those moments. When you feel okay, you feel, wow, right now I'm sitting here, I'm not placing any demands on myself to be a certain way, I'm not placing any demands on life or anybody else, I'm just being here, I'm just sitting, just with a quiet presence there. I'm not troubled in this moment by the dramas of one's history, by what I've got to do in the future. I'm just being here, and I'm not thinking about it. I'm just feeling what this experience is of just being. And the reason that it's important, because you want to be able to return quickly and easily back to this sense of being and presence. And the only way we can return back to that sense of being in present and presence if we really know it intimately. One's got to know it, not with the mind, with the feeling. It's the feeling which is the deep point. And if in life we keep forgetting the deep point of the feeling, and that feeling steady and okay, not as a liberation here, I'm still talking practice, and we quietly return to this moment and we feel a certain calm and steadiness, and it may just be for a few minutes, but if we're really putting the mindfulness and the consciousness to it, just and the resting in that, we'll begin to know, not intellectually, we'll begin to know what that is more, we'll begin to be able to find it more easily, and when we can find that quiet depth more easily, we will naturally start losing interest in all our reactivity, because we have the sense of something calm and deep with the being, and the feeling is the key to this. It really is such a precious. And the Buddha commented once. He was asked about what is life, and one of the responses which he said was, "Life comes together in feelings." It's a rather beautiful statement, there. And sometimes, with our relationship to the perceptions and feelings that take place, it is, as I mentioned a moment ago, sometimes it is the looking outwardly as much as the looking inwardly. And mindfulness is not just looking here. The teachings equally state the inner mindfulness here and the external, the outer mindfulness. Quite often it's the inner mindfulness which is getting all the publicity. Be mindful of yourself, etc. And I read in the Guardian, one of those dreadful English newspapers, sometime, I think it might have been last year. And as you know, this is a slight sideways step for a moment, probably know, if you take an interest in these things, there's a lot of reference these days to in neuroscience and wiring up people with things on their sticky bits on their head and plugging them into a machine and sending them into La La Land or whatever that is going on. And sometimes with this world that we live in, all those kind of measurements, whatever, may be taking place. And there was a piece in The Guardian, and there's lots of writings taking place of the benefits of mindfulness. And now, of course, there has to be, if you're for something, science has to prove it doesn't really make any difference and it's not working. You can have for, have to have against, whatever it might be about. So The Guardian had a full page article with the science shows that, and this one was, there is as much benefit for you watching television as practicing mindfulness there. And so some of my friends said to me, "Well, Christopher, what do you think about this?" And my response was, "I totally agree with the research, as long as you don't turn the television on." It's called the sideways look at situations. And in that, where as human beings we go towards there, as mentioned, it is not That we always have to be in touch with ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not that we have to be mindful all the time, which is actually humanly impossible anyway. At time, you and I know, with perception and with feeling and with the views that we have had, we might be entering into a challenging situation. That could be the family dynamic, of course, which is one of the most popular. And it could be the work, it could be the colleague, it could be the friend, and all the vulnerabilities of life. And the teachings and the practices, they include in that a preparation to be mindful, to be concentrated, to be clear, to use the posture well, to have lots of energy, to be really present, which is a strong theme that we're engaged in here, so that the mindfulness can extend to the other, whoever she, he may be. And we walk in, if it's a house, let us say, or an office, or a meeting, we walk in fully prepared, fully conscious human beings, because we've got an intuition or a knowledge, this is going to be difficult. And just to breeze in these difficult situations, we come in unready. When we come in unready, the perceptions and the feelings and the impacts really have an impact on us. And this preparation and this readiness needs the support of our energy, our mindfulness, the power of attention, the really catching what the feeling is. And it's not to get rid, it's important here, of the unpleasant feeling. You can be the Buddha of the Buddhas, just you and I, we're still going to have unpleasant feelings in life. I keep telling people, look, life's no picnic. And those unpleasant feelings will have some association, not always, some association with history. The memory is one of the important aspects of the influence of unpleasant feeling, and pleasant too for that matter. And can we, in the difficult situation, just remember, mindfulness again, just remember, in a difficult situation, it could be with ourselves, just meditating, it could be with the other, recognize, with the unpleasant feeling, if it is getting intensified, which it does for us at times, has it got in it history? That's all. Is it related more to the past than to the present? And sometimes we notice that, and that's a reminder, whew, got some practice here to do, at least some reflection, some good friendship around, etc. Sometimes it's not so related to the past. It really is related to the present. And when sometimes these vipassana teachers, bless them, but don't forgive them, will say to you, you're experiencing some pain in your body. You experience some real pressure or stress in your mind. Lots of stuff and feelings are coming up. And then they will say to you, oh, that's all your old samkaras, those of you who know this. This goes on in the Theravada tradition. They should be ashamed of themselves for thinking like this. And they say, oh, it's just your samkaras. So naturally, the person there will think, oh my God, it's all my samkaras coming up from my past, and my God, how am I going to work out this lot? Yeah, etc. There's so much which is coming up. And God, it's coming up by the bucket load. And then, blimey, if I become a Buddhist, I might even have the terror of believing in my past lives. And then, wow, there's a hell of a lot then to work out, etc. People think like this and begin to think, this is not in the Buddha's teachings, everything which arises is related to my past. nonsense. It's a nonsense idea. And then people would say, especially if you live in kind of new agey kind of towns like me, they say to you, you get sick, you get ill, you know, you have a difficult time, etc. And they say, well, you must have done something horrible in your past life. People who come up with these views are in desperate need of therapy. So how easily it can be that we buy the package, it's all about my past. It can be a factor. But we're in the practice of liberation. We're in the practice of knowing what was, being clear about it, not denying it, but also knowing what is. And sometimes the what is much more significant than what was there. If, to take the example with your meditations, you're sitting in a sitting meditation, you're doing your walking meditation or whatever, and you perhaps extend the period of time, and some intensity arises, some pressure arises, and there is some willpower which is going on, and you're pushing yourself very hard, and one's got the idea, you know, if I keep pushing I'm going to get somewhere, etc. And then that very pressure then starts creating a huge amount of agitation, and then the view arises and the perception and the feeling arises, my God, I've really hit a load of unresolved, repressed, psychotic stuff inside myself, etc. Please, manager on the retreat, where are the antidepressants? There. It may have no actual relationship to the past at all. It's the manufacture going on in the present of just simply putting so much pressure on oneself to achieve, to go beyond, to transcend, to get enlightened, and all those other odd ideas. And all that pressure inside of us. And of course the mind can't take that pressure. It's going to rebel. And it's not the past coming into the present there. It's the relationship to the present. And if one didn't abuse the mind in the meditation, one wouldn't have that trauma and drama and pressure. And sometimes you will see people have been on some of these retreats, whoever, Zen or Goenka or Christopher or whoever it might be, there, and have been pushing themselves so hard there, that sometimes the impact of all of that is the body shaking, head twitching and nervousness. The system has been shaken. And the person's still thinking, oh, it's my old karma, it's my old samkaras, that means mental formation, that's what's doing it. I don't think so. I think it's this relationship that we have to the living present. And it isn't always easy to know and to be clear what is yesterday and what is today, what is the mixture as well. And that's, you know, part of knowing ourselves as women and men in the of the earth, and knowing ourselves in a full way. And my ask, important and profound question, yes, but where's the liberation? Important question. Oh my gosh, you expect me to answer it. What's important to understand here, and to allow these things to, in a way, be digested. I've mentioned the importance of really knowing perceptions, that's the recognition, the view, feelings, knowing those, there. The quiet reflective thought, which we can learn and be helpful for us It's not an anti-thought teaching in any way whatsoever. But knowing those kind of thoughts which are not healthy, not helpful, and do not contribute to peace of mind and to seeing clearly. In all of this, not perfectly, as we get a little bit more sense of wholeness, to use that beautiful term of Carl Jung, who I regard as a Buddha of the West, that sense of wholeness of the being, when we're just sitting quietly, we just feel alive and we feel present, we're not oppressed by any views, we're not oppressed by religion or philosophy or science or roles or identity, just those precious moments of just being alive and a certain sense of wholeness, and as I said earlier, not really demanding anything from anyone. And in that quiet sense of the sense of wholeness, which the teachings and practices contribute to, there is still perception and feelings, obviously, which are taking place, pleasant and unpleasant and in between. There is still recognition of what our experience is and the experience of others. And a certain sense, it might be short-lived, of integration. And one asks, as I'm mentioning, but what about the liberation? What easily happens, and humanly enough, is that we easily rely upon the perceptions and the feelings which are helpful and authentic and clear and supportive, but the Buddha, and this is not easy, the Buddha has spoken of with regularity of liberation in the language of seeing the cessation. Understand the word cessation? What might be that?
Atira, asaka.
Yeah, the ending, the finishing of perception and feeling. Knowing the end of perception and feeling, but it has a very precise meaning. And what that is referring to, there are times in our fullness, in our richness, in our, let's say, sense of wholeness there, though the perceptions and the feelings are taking place, with the calmness and the reflection that's going on, but there will be, in authentic clarity, a recognition or a sense there's something more than this. There is a sense in the deep of the being, that's the deep, deep voice, which is saying, will say to us, yes, I feel a whole person. I don't feel troubled by my history. I might be quite clear this happened in December, but it's lost its power to trouble me. I'm not putting great pressure on myself about tomorrow or next year or the end of my life or what's happening around. And the inner voice, in a way, will not be fully satisfied with this. It might feel really satisfying when we're miserable. Oh my gosh, just give me some peace, whatever. Give me some calm and some clarity and some steadiness. I'll take it. Forget liberation. I'll just, let me have a moment of feeling whole and complete as a human being there. And understandably, but the deep will not settle for anything less than the best. It can't. And in our being, the human being, in the deep of the human being, that we might forget it. We might spend our life involved in the pursuit of the finite. Things, money, possessions, status, good experiences, and everything else which is in transition, which is in change. We might spend our life doing that. We might get a lot of delight with it. We might have more happiness and satisfaction than unhappiness and dissatisfaction by the engagement only with the finite, only with the limited, only that which comes and goes. And in the sense of wholeness there's a spark in the human being somewhere which can move us beautifully, which puts into perspective all these finite pursuits of the human there, and encourages us, and the best of teachings encourages, to find and to know and to see what is infinite. Not what is in transition, but what is eternal. What is not what just is for today, but is forever. What is vast rather than small? What is expansive rather than contracted? What is limitless rather than limited? And the best preparation for us as human beings is to recognize and acknowledge our capacity for wholeness. And the interest shifts, and I'm saying this organically, naturally, that in the wholeness of the being, not perfectly, there will be an interest can emerge. What is that greater than my finite, modest, small existence? And the interest in that will transcend, or start to transcend, the perceptions, feelings, and thoughts about my daily world. There is no rejection of them. It's not like one is anti-life in any way, but there is a genuine sense of the limits of the perception and the feeling about the way I am looking at it. There's a sense of the limits, even if they're quite harmonious and quite well adjusted and integrated. Wow, I'm looking at the world just through this heart and mind. Is it possible? This is what liberation is about. Is it in which there is a knowing and seeing, which in fact, the deep realization is everything is an expression of the infinite. Everything is the confirmation of it, even the hardships. Everything is the confirmation of that which is expansive, that which cannot be measured. And our primary weakness, or vulnerability as a human being, is to concentrate so much on the small and the finite and the particular and the detail and this and that, we just lost sight of the bigger picture. And if we don't have the sense of that, we will exaggerate the small events, and therefore we will suffer. We will suffer. So the perception and the feelings and the thoughts, recollections, really, really have a genuine place in everyday life. My goodness me, with the Dharma teaching so much beautiful, profound emphasis on the relationship to feelings and the relationship to the way we look at things and our relationship to thoughts. Thousands of discourse. Look at this. Not as an end in itself. Not just to be a well-adjusted, well-integrated human being, precious as it is and sometimes as rare as it is with all the stress of the life there. But to be adjusted as if we could forget our life, as if our life is okay, it's moving along. In order that we keep our duties and our responsibilities and our care for others and for our daily life. But almost to leave it, or be with it rather quietly, because we've got another interest going on. We may not be able to explain that interest and find out if there's some infinite which we can realize and know, if we can really see and know that which has no measure to it. And we might, it might just be from time to time, the glance up into the night sky, the glance across the oceans and the fields, the touch of the flower to our being. Something can remind us of something much bigger than our small world, because everything is the confirmation of it. And it's extraordinarily liberating. While we live our everyday life and pass through our everyday existence. Thank you for listening. Let's have our quiet minute together, shall we please? Beings be deeply in touch with the everyday matters of daily life. May all beings perceive and feel in as full and clear a way as possible. May all beings live with love and liberation. So thank you for lending an ear. The time is timeless, 4:40, and have some small groups. Some of us at this time, for some it's further sitting, walking, standing, and as we leave the hall, for those who are may still be sitting, that we walk out as angels. Angels are those lovely human beings who do not have to touch the earth. There are a few around, there are a few here. Okay, thank you.